Welcome to Plot Spackle. This is John, and I was scarred by E.T.
This is Eric. My first alien movie was actually Aliens on TV.
And I'm Richard, and probably the first alien film I saw was Flight of the Navigator.
And if you haven't figured it out today, we're talking about a movie that has aliens in it. Can you guess what movie it is?
That's all right. We're not going to make you guess. It's Independence Day.
Oh, I was really hoping they just yell out in their car. You know, maybe during rush hour traffic, look like weirdos.
Our dedicated fans did answer, and of course they got it right.
And you know who you are, and we really appreciate you.
All right, so Independence Day, it's a major blockbuster. It has a cultural presence, I would say
impact.
Yeah.
Like everyone knows the speech from Independence Day. I mean, it's definitely left its mark. Austin Powers decided to parody it or steal clips from it to show the White House blowing up or whatever. It definitely fulfilled the destruction cessation or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so it had its part. And it's also, you know, all super, super American, super patriotic.
The most American.
Yeah.
So we're going to throw it out right now. Spoiler warning for Independence Day. If you haven't seen it since it came out in 96, go watch it. It's pretty good.
And also, reverse spoiler warning here, because I don't think any of us have actually seen Independence Day Resurgence. No spoilers for that, guys, all right? We don't want you to ruin that experience for us if we ever actually get around to watching this sequel that is set decades after the first one came out.
Did you know there is a crappy off-brand called Independent Day Insurgence?
Of course.
Is it one of those, like, asylum films that are known for the Transmorpher movies?
Yes, it is.
Or the Snakes on a Train?
Oh, yes, it is.
Snakes on a Train.
Oh, I almost want to... We don't have a Patreon yet, but if we do in the future... If this is future you listening to past us, and we do have a Patreon, suggest that as one of the Patreon rewards. Force us to watch one of those crappy movies.
Ah, don't do that. All right, so...
It better be a high reward level, though.
Yeah, so back to Independence Day. Tell us about movie basic facts, Richard.
All right, so Independence Day came out the day before Independence Day in 1996. Had a $75 million budget, earned $50 million back in its opening weekend, grossed in the U.S. about $306 million, about $817 million worldwide on its release.
Are those 1996 dollars, or are those, like, adjusted for inflation?
Those are 1997 dollars, because that's when they stopped counting.
That's not bad. That probably rounds up to, like, a billion today. That's a major blockbuster, guys.
So, big film, and by all accounts, had a pretty star-studded cast for the time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, a quick plot synopsis. Aliens come, they attack Earth on Independence Day.
No, they attack Earth on July 2nd. We
fight
for our independence on Independence
Day.
Yeah,
so within 48 hours, Earth fights back, led by America, and beats the aliens. It's kind of a riff on War of the Worlds. Same basic concept. A little variation here and there, but...
Boil it down, it's basically coming of age, but it's not that. Surmounting the, or beating the odds movie... You know, which is what America does, or what we want to think we do.
Yeah, is that a spirit of the USA?
So, that's a pretty solid, spoilery-free
plot. It's hard to spoil, because, you know, not much else happens. Well, the aliens are bad, and the US wins. That's the movie.
We should probably jump into the actual plot holes that people have. John will start us off with the biggest plot hole that people seem to have, or the biggest gripe they have with this movie.
Oh yeah, this just isn't any plot hole. This plot hole is kind of special to me because it's one that's pretty well known, and it's one of the inspirations for Plot Spackle itself is this plot hole, because I think it's pretty easy to fill. Like, it's not that hard if you actually just think about it. And so the plot hole is, guys, how did they infect the alien hardware with a man-made virus, especially when it's on a Mac? I mean, everyone knows in that time period, Macs could not communicate with anything. So how was it communicating with the alien machine and then successfully disrupting them, even with, like, the little graphic and everything? It's just unlikely. It's impossible.
Ooh, pick me.
Richard,
pick me.
Prove me wrong.
All right. Simple. Apple computers are based on alien technology. They've had alien hardware since Roswell, and that's what Jobs and Wozniak actually based their Apple products on. So it's really easy.
I kind of have to agree with that. Because you look at Macs now, and they're the trendy, cool icon. They're a fashion accessory. But kids, way back in the day, Macs were not cool. In fact, you were a gigantic nerd if you even wanted a Mac. Although that is a good theory, my personal thought on that is they've had the spaceship, the alien spaceship, since the 50s or 60s or whenever they say.
For 50 years.
Yeah, 50 years. You see in the movie that they can make repairs to the spaceship, so they actually know how the tech works. Who's to say they didn't reverse engineer it through those 50 years, and David had a chance to look over the notes and just see, oh, hey, this is how they actually work. Instead of using a base to the binary system, they use maybe a tertiary system or whatever.
Now, see, I think that they still used a binary system. I'm looking at it from, we know that their technology can interact with our technology. In fact, David corrects their code because it's interfering with the satellite system. And he finds the pattern, and he can read the pattern.
So yeah, it's
on the very machine that they were complaining about.
Plus, screwing things up is a lot easier than making things run. When all you have to do is take a highly complicated piece of machinery and screw up one thing so that it doesn't work anymore, that's far easier than protecting it against this.
And chances are they probably didn't even think that we could, as in
the human race.
I meant to say the actual aliens. They probably didn't have their virus checkers.
Yeah.
What virus checkers did they? I guess they had McAfee back then, but who actually pays for McAfee or Norton? But then I guess that wasn't the virus it has become now. Computer jokes, kids.
Yeah. So I think it's probably a combination of factors. I imagine that human computing was influenced by the wreck. They do say that they couldn't really understand how things worked because they had no power before.
But they did have the last 24 hours being very exciting as they got to play with active systems.
And they were able to interact with it to some level, enough to repair it. So they had to have some understanding of it, how it goes together, combined with the back door that the aliens left open with their ability to interact with our stuff.
It is a fairly silly plot point. I mean, this was during the 90s when computers were the next big thing, and people who are writing about computers didn't actually really understand what computers...
Remember the Hackers movie?
I've actually never seen the Hackers movie.
Ha ha!
Yeah, so it does fall in the computers are magic kind of thought behind it, but it's something that you could work towards. It's not completely far-fetched.
Yeah, I mean, they actually had, like, the right stuff. I know the actual virus code was written in C++. I think that plot hole, although it's a silly plot point, is not actually a plot hole, really.
Yeah, it's less silly if you consider that it is a War of the Worlds story, and in War of the Worlds, the aliens are brought down by the common cold, they get a virus. And so that's how the aliens are brought down in Independence Day, by a virus.
See, kids, this summer Blockbuster is way deeper than you thought it was.
Not really, it just...
It's way deep! Anyways, enough with the virus bit. Let's talk about the other plot hole, which is the entrance to Area 51. Apparently, it is two guards in a shack. Probably not even an air-conditioned shack. And it gets to be about 120 degrees out there. So what is Uncle Sam doing to those two guys? I mean, that's basically torture right there. But to get back on point, there's two guys protecting all of the secret base from a shack.
Well, my point on that is that they're not actually protecting the base from the shack. They're the perimeter guard. It's their job to, you know, phone in and let people know that people are coming. That's not the entrance.
Yeah, the actual installation would be further away and have more security. It's just, this is the initial point. They verify visually things, they'd call in. They would have air conditioning too, just so you know.
I don't know, that shack was pretty small.
It's much easier to air condition then.
Oh, okay.
Less BTUs.
That's true. See, my personal opinion on this is, if you guys have seen National Lampoon's Vacation, when they go to Wally World, and you have John Candy as the security guard there, I think they're kind of playing the same role. like someone shows up to Area 51, those guards' jobs is to go out to the vehicle and say, "Sorry, folks, Area 51 is closed today," and then turn them around.
Yeah, they're just a small contact. They're not there to stop a concentrated effort to get in. No, they would call in, and the base with a lot more soldiers and equipment and guards would handle it rather well. They're there to deter sightseers and also to give a bit of a facade. I mean, if you look at a place and it's got like soldiers crawling all over the place and guard towers, you're gonna look at it more. A shack with two guys?
Yeah, it's like, oh,
that's this, not important.
This is a just a Air Force base on a dried up lake bed.
Yeah.
Big deal. So there's that plot hole. Spackled.
Just filled in.
I mean, if it even is a plot hole, it not really is.
Yeah, it's just, it was just a little petty thing from a website.
All right, so the next one that gets brought up is the admittedly very cool canyon chase scene. Early on in the film, Will Smith is being chased by the aliens, and so he gets a really clever idea of flying into a canyon and having the alien follow him. And our alien, with his superior fighter technology, decides to follow him in what can only be described as, by the way it ends, a bad decision. Why didn't he just wait for Will Smith to leave?
So why should he wait for Will Smith to leave? He's got him in his sights. He's following him. He is a master alien fighter pilot, right? So he's just gonna shoot this human down, show him what's up.
Literally one blast from his laser beams can kill.
And then he can fly back. I mean, it might seem make sense, but my thought is, we know this alien ship is a generation ship. Like, it has been traveling towards Earth for a long time. And so realistically, every alien combatant we see is a first generation fighter who has zero experience. They've been trained, but they haven't had to actually think it through. And so he's going to make noob mistakes. They've been winning mostly off of superior technology, not superior tactics at any point.
Plus, I mean, what if Will Smith is actually going to a base that he has in that canyon? The alien is supposed to be trying to stop him from getting to that place.
Another thing, too, if you look at the actual alien ship, the cockpit view is very limited. So if he just needs to follow him or look down to see him, he actually can't look down because there's no windows down there. So I'm assuming he's keeping visual contact at all times or as often as he can. I don't know which canyon it's supposed to be, but canyons can be pretty big, guys. And that one had a lot of twists and turns.
My bet, personally, is that it's supposed to be Rainbow Canyon, which is used for actual fighter training.
Ooh, fun fact. So, our next spot. So, we get this crashed alien fighter that's crashed there, and Will Smith, in his character, Captain...
Stephen Harris,
walks up, and when the alien comes out, he just knocks him out. One hit, that alien is out for hours. I mean, he's in this, like, biomechanical suit that can protect him from a crash, gives him incredible strength to cover up for the fact that he's kind of a small, frail alien, and just Will Smith takes him out. Why is Will Smith an actor and not a boxer?
My main problem with this is the alien did just survive a crash. They say in the movie that aliens have bodies just as frail as ours. So my question is, if a football player gets a concussion, why doesn't he just go out and continue to play football because he's wearing his helmet? You can walk away from a concussion. You need to be careful about it, and it is dangerous, and I'm not saying that concussions are nothing, but I'm pretty sure that alien is probably banged up a bit.
And my thought on there is, again, given that they've described the aliens as being fairly similar physiologically to humans in their, you know, tolerances and what they can deal with. Will Smith was wearing a flight suit that is designed to deal with atmospheric pressure, not supposed to keep him alive from somebody punching him in a fist fight. If you're a pilot and you're getting into a fist fight, you've already done something horribly wrong.
Isn't that the theme to Con Air?
Yeah.
All right, and see... Yeah, I agree with all these. He's also kind of in this suit. He might have been knocked out of his position, too, where he's most stable. Because he wasn't in his seat when he was punched. He was climbing out, and so he just got caught by surprise. And Will Smith got lucky. Hit him in the sweet spot, made the head bounce around and knock him out. And he wasn't out for hours for that. As he's getting dragged along in the parachute, there's occasional kicking going on.
Yeah, Will Smith is not happy that that alien ruined his vacation time. I mean, I think that's justified.
He was going to have a great 4th of July weekend.
He was going to barbecue, kids. barbecue.
And what is that smell?
All right. To go on with an alien anatomy section of this podcast, as the doctors at Area 51 are beginning to dissect the alien, they don't really think to put the alien under anesthesia. The alien decides, you know what, now is a good time to wake up, and let's cause some havoc. I mean, to quote that Rick and Morty show, oh no, here I go, a killing again. Why didn't the doctors think to sedate the alien and stop all that killing?
So there's a type of doctor called an anesthesiologist. And their whole point is to successfully sedate people so as not to kill them, but also to make it so they don't experience extreme discomfort and pain from being cut open during surgery.
Remember, kids, putting someone to sleep using drugs is really easy. Stopping them from completely dying in that sleep is hard.
Yeah, they have a job cut out for them because individuals have different tolerances, and you can do some generalizations based off like weight and mass, but there's no 100% guarantee. And so these anesthesiologists, they have a difficult job, and they do a good job, though. I want to say that. And so it's this thought of, you can't just say, oh, well, we can sedate it. It's one, an alien. They know its tolerances are within human ranges, but they only had one to work with, and we don't know if they even successfully were able to sedate it at any point, because it's not like it was saying...
didn't have vocal cords, so it can't give us the rating on a pain scale.
Yeah, or the fact that they were kind of caught completely by surprise of their level of telepathic ability, meaning that one was probably brain dead already by the time they got to it.
Like John was saying, they had the three aliens, one that was still alive, but you can't really test anesthesia on dead aliens. You can't stop something from being dead by pumping it full of drugs and bringing it out of sleep. I don't know. Maybe there's a doctor bad enough that can do that.
Not in this universe, at least. Maybe in a different...
in a different alien franchise?
In a different cinematic universe. Pumping things full of drugs to bring it back to life does work, but not this one. And my other thought is, so when they're doing the surgery, they are in fact removing it from the suit.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't even really sedate it yet until they get out of the suit and out of the film. Like, at the point where they are when it wakes up and starts messing things up is where the point they'd be able to sedate it.
And to be fair, they also say in the movie, it doesn't even look alive, does it? So they might have been under the assumption this might not, we might have been too late. This alien isn't alive.
Yeah, it's been cooking as it's been drugged in a parachute.
While receiving repeated beatings from Captain Harris.
Yeah, and yeah, it waking up just at that moment worked out. And so it's not a plot hole. It's just kind of convenient how it worked out that way.
But I don't think there's very many shows where you'd like to sit through 2 hours of surgery. And then the important stuff happens. That doesn't quite fit.
If bad things don't happen, then there's not a movie.
All right. So, speaking of convenient things, how about how Will Smith is capable of flying an alien fighter after having, you know, sat in one for all of, like, maybe 6 hours? It's pretty convenient that he's capable of just taking off in the alien fighter craft.
So, that is convenient. I will ask a question, though, is did they have any other choice but to try it out? I mean, he'd seen him in action. He's the only survivor from their first strike attempt. And my other thing is I've brought up before how these are probably brand new fighters. These are noobs. I imagine that there is a bit of technological adjustment. Kind of like when you're playing a video game, like in Battlefield, there's helicopters. They don't work like real helicopters.
John, are you telling me that playing a video game, you aren't carefully adjusting the rotor speed to make sure you're hovering or going up? Or that's not a constant thing you have to be careful about?
No, because there's a part of the program is to adjust so it feels like you're actually flying the helicopter just by moving a couple joysticks. And I think that might be a very similar concept in this alien ship, is so they train them to an extent, but really a lot of the work is being done by the onboard computers. And
or, well, they have this in the end of the movie too. They have the controller guy at the one they fire the nuke into. He is taking control of the ships, so
yeah, just remotely, and it's not like he's actively controlling them either.
So there is precedence in this movie that the ships are not being completely flown by the new pilot or the pilots.
Yeah, and so there's probably a lot of adjustment. So all you have to do is get the concept of, all right, this makes you go one way, this makes you go another way, up, down, and go at it, and the ship does most of the work for you. I mean, there wasn't like a whole ton of switches and levers and graphs and meters and...
Another thing too, so in the movie, we've talked about this, but they are able, they said they're able to repair alien the alien technology, which means they understand the alien technology at least to a certain point. So they were, I'm assuming they were probably able to get a basic understanding, and they could have given a crash course to Will Smith's character just in the little bit. You'll notice that they have a bunch of, not post-it notes, but just informational piece of the paper taped around the cockpit that says, oh, this, you, if you want to turn, move the sticks this way, or if you want to shut the windows, press this button.
Yeah, so they'd figured out what mechanically happens.
The very exciting last 24 hours.
Yeah. Someone was taking furious notes as they pressed buttons.
Mm-hmm. So, like we said, there's precedence for that in the movie.
All right. And so, what comes to their final plot hole is, so we know from the movie and the events starring our main characters that you can take out the alien spacecraft by imploding on its main weapon just as it's firing. So that's good and all, but there's a lot of these crafts all over the world, and not everywhere's going to have fighter jets. Now, I'm quoting the website we found this on.
Oh, what was the name of that website, by the way? We should probably give credit.
Movieplotholes.com.
Okay, just to give credit where credit's due.
Where they say, what is Congo going to do? Throw a spear at it?
That's racist.
Yeah, that was my thought. How is every country going to deal with this? I mean, all the major population centers got nuked already in most large military installations. So, I mean, and it's a really specific thing to have to do.
Well, one thing that's very clear is that they didn't get everything, because the U.S. still has fighters, so presumably other major powers will still have fighters. They didn't get every military base. Otherwise, Area 51 would have been nuked already. So hidden bases are probably still hidden. So other countries across the world will have this, and given that it is a survival for the human race kind of thing, I mean, it just becomes a matter of time for everybody to take stuff out.
Yeah, and just specific against that example, just because a nation doesn't have the highest end tech doesn't mean it doesn't have any tech. And really, it's just you need to cause an explosion of some kind with a missile, which is a pretty common technology, at the to cause the misfiring of their main weapon for it to just blow back. That's all you had to do. And with the main ship gone from the strategic nuke, they don't even have their shields and poor coordination.
Yeah, just thinking back, like, this is me thinking right now on it. The ships went after main population centers, but let's take a look at North and South Dakota. How many nuclear sites are there? Like, just missile silos.
So many. So many Minuteman missile silos.
I'm assuming that you could probably launch one of those missiles and not arm the nuke, just straight and fire it at the... I know Russia's going to have sites like that.
Well, I mean, kind of, but you'd probably want to actually use a... SAM spots or artillery, because nukes are ballistic missiles. They're not really easy to aim at that kind of close range. You're aiming at a target much further away.
But just what I'm trying to say is there's going to be those, the alien ships are very effective in concentrated areas, but as soon as they get it out into the prairies or just like, let's say Siberia, they're not going to be able to do much. Are they going to shoot the laser for every single town that they run across?
Yeah, every small town. No, that's why they even had the invasion force, right? They were getting ready. That was the stage one, was to hit the major population centers, scatter defensive forces, and then they were going to bring in the actual ground troops.
Yeah, I think their plan was kind of failed from the beginning, because if they're just as frail as we are, they're probably just going to get shot. Anyways, so John, that was not... Well, I guess that was the last plot hole, but I have a nitpicky part with this movie.
Oh, is this a special nitpick?
It is the special nitpick, and this is the one nitpick that I couldn't stop thinking about. So, in the movie, when the president gets into his fighter jet, his designation is Eagle One. But if the movie Air Force One, Die Hard on the President's Plane, has taught me anything, that plane should be called Air Force One. So why isn't it called Air Force One?
And I do have an answer for that. A really long answer.
Only for the Patreon members.
If you want to find just how deep my rabbit hole went to answer Eric's nitpick on Eagle One versus Air Force One,
subscribe on Patreon.
Subscribe on Patreon. Help us pay for this, because it'll pay for microphones and hosting and air conditioning in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to be like those guards.
See, they didn't have air conditioning. They were true American heroes. They didn't need no commie air conditioning.
But there we go, guys. Plot Spackle for Independence Day.
Let us know if you have a movie that you would like us to cover. You can let us know by tweeting us at Plot Spackle Pod.
Or letting us know on our Facebook page, Plot Spackle Podcast.
I'd say you could also try and message John on Twitter, but...
I'm not on Twitter.
The easiest thing they would do would probably try and find him in Monster Hunter World and then sending him a message that way.
All right, well, so like us on Facebook.
Leave us a rating or review on iTunes.
Oh, yeah, that. And
we'll see you next time.
Yep. See you next time.